Okay. Let's unpack this. It is late February 2026, and the gaming world has been holding its collective breath for what felt like, honestly, it felt like a mythological event at this point.
Right, the Pokemon Presents showcase.
Exactly, the showcase that just went down for International Pokemon Day. And look, usually these things are pretty cute. You get a mobile spinoff, maybe some DLC for a game you already own. Everyone nods politely and we move on with our lives.
Yeah, it's usually just a calendar marker, you know, not a seismic shift. But this year was different. The energy going in was totally different.
Seismic is the perfect word. The expectations were stratospheric, and somehow they might have actually exceeded them. We were talking about the technological silence from Nintendo and Game Freak finally breaking.
And breaking in a massive way.
Yeah. But before we get into the shiny new toys, I want to ask you, was the pressure really that high? Or is that just internet echo chamber noise?
Oh, no. The pressure was very real. It was a pressure cooker. You have to remember, for the last 3 or 4 years, there has been this growing tension. Investors felt it. Fans certainly felt it. Nintendo and Game Freak were essentially operating on hardware that belonged in a museum.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
The competition, you know, Sony, Microsoft, PC Gaming, they were lapping them 3 times over. Everyone knew something had to break.
And break it did. So here is our mission for today. We are doing a serious deep dive into the aftermath of this showcase. We're not just fanboying over trailers here. We are looking at the big reveal of the Nintendo Switch 2, and specifically the two major titles launching this era.
Pokemon Winds and Waves and Pokemon Champions.
Exactly. We need to understand why Nintendo's stock jumped 8.5% in 48 hours. Because that is not normal for a company of that size.
No, that is a massive market correction.
Right. And to guide us, we have parsed through a really comprehensive analytical report from the Tekken Army and the Tekken Game editorial team. They did a phenomenal job stripping away the marketing fluff and looking at the raw silicon and the software architecture.
You really did. It's a great breakdown of what's actually happening under the hood.
So let's start with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Or maybe the copperajah in the room. The visuals. Because for the last few years, the narrative around Pokemon has been, well, let's be charitable and say complicated.
You are thinking of Scarlet and Violet.
I am. I'm having flashbacks just saying the names. I remember walking into a town in Violet and the game just chugging. It felt like the Switch was gasping for air.
Yeah, the windmills moving at 2 frames per second.
Yes, the windmills.
Yeah.
The Tekken report actually quotes sources describing it as visually archaic and citing catastrophic frame rate drops. It was rough.
It was objectively poor performance. And frankly, Game Freak used the Switch 1's limitations as a shield for a long time. They could always say, well, the hardware is 10 years old. What do you expect? We are doing the best we can with a tablet from 2017.
Right.
But with Winds and Waves, that shield is completely vaporized. This is the first mainline open world title built from the silicon up for the Switch 2.
And the setting, this new region inspired by tropical islands, the Mediterranean and Oceania, it looks gorgeous in the trailer.
Okay.
But we all know trailers can be faked. Help me understand the tech here. The report mentions infinite rendering draw distance. Mm-hmm. I know what those words mean individually, but what does that actually do for me as a player? Is it just eye candy?
It is a lot more than eye candy. It's really about the scale of the world. Mm. Think about how games usually cheat to save processing power. They use pop-in.
Okay, yeah, like when you walk forward and a tree magically appears 10 feet in front of you.
Exactly. Or a mountain in the distance is just a blurry gray triangle until you get close. Infinite draw distance means the console is powerful enough to render the geometry of the entire visible world all at once. If you are standing on a peak, you aren't seeing a wall of fog to hide the horizon. You're seeing the actual coastline miles away.
So if I see an island, I can actually go there without it loading in chunks.
Yes. It creates a true sense of place. But the Tekken analysts point out something even more subtle than the distance. It's the texture work. They're using PBR, physically based rendering.
Okay. Physically based rendering. That sounds like some heavy marketing jargon. Break that down for us. Is that just a fancy way of saying better graphics?
Not exactly. It's actually a huge leap in lighting physics. In the older games, a Pokemon was basically a cartoon 3D model with flat colors painted on it. It looked the exact same, whether it was in a dark cave or out under the bright sun.
Right, it just had a flat look to it.
Exactly. But PBR simulates how light interacts with specific materials at a molecular level. The report gives this killer example. Compare a Gyarados to a Charizard.
Okay, so water type versus fire type. Big blue snake versus orange dragon.
Right. A Gyarados has wet, slick scales. Under a midday sun, PBR calculates how light bounces off water. It should be blinding, sharp, reflective, like a wet car hood. You should almost have to squint when the sun hits it.
Oh, wow.
But Charizard has dry, leathery, cracked skin. Light shouldn't bounce off that. It should be absorbed and diffused. It should look matte and rough.
So the game engine actually knows the difference between a wet scale and dry leather.
Yes, it does. It renders the scorching texture of Charizard's wings differently than, say, the slime of a Muk or the metal of a Magnemite.
Yeah.
It makes them feel like physical objects actually occupying space, not just digital stickers floating on a background.
That is the aha moment right there.
Yeah.
Stops being just a video game and starts being a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
But, and here's my skepticism kicking in. How are they doing this? This is still a handheld console, right? I can throw it in my backpack. How is it pulling off lighting effects that usually require a massive PC tower with three cooling fans?
That is the magic of the custom silicon. The Switch 2 is running on a custom NVIDIA Tegra T239 SO.
Okay.
But raw power isn't the whole story here. If they just tried to brute force this kind of rendering, the battery would die in 20 minutes. The secret sauce, according to the breakdown, is AI. Specifically, NVIDIA's DLSS 3.5 architecture.
We hear AI everywhere now. It's in my toaster at this point. Is it just a buzzword or is it doing real heavy lifting?
Well, in this case, it is doing the heavy lifting. Think of it like this. Rendering a game at 4K resolution is incredibly taxing. It drains the battery and melts the chips. So the Switch 2 doesn't actually render at 4K natively. When you are playing in portable mode, it's doing a really crisp 1080p. Hmm. That is manageable for the chip.
Okay, so it's rendering standard HD in your hands.
Right, but when you dock it to your TV, the specialized tensor cores wake up. These are dedicated AI chips right on the board. They take that 1080p image and they essentially hallucinate the missing pixels.
Hallucinate them.
Yeah. The AI has been trained on what a 4K image should look like, so it fills in the gaps instantly. It reconstructs a sparkling 4K image at a locked 60 frames per second without the processor having to actually do the math for every single pixel.
So it's lying to us.
Huh. It's a beautiful, efficient lie. It gives you that high-end performance without the heat or the bulk. It's working smarter, not harder.
Which brings us to the water. I saw the phrase computational fluid dynamics in the report. That sounds like something you use to design a submarine, not a water level in a game for kids.
It is high-end physics. In most games, water is just a flat surface with a wavy animation playing on top. If you throw a rock in, it plays a canned splash animation.
Yeah.
With computational fluid dynamics, the water is an actual volume.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning if a wave crashes against a rock and winds and waves, it's not a pre-rendered animation. The water particles are actually colliding with the rock geometry in real time.
So the ocean actually feels dangerous.
It feels alive. It pushes back against you.
But look, visuals are only half the battle. If the game plays like a slideshow or if I'm staring at a loading screen every 5 minutes, I really don't care how shiny the Gyarados is.
Mm.
And this is where the report got me really excited. The quote was, "The death of loading screens." Is that literal or just hype?
It seems to be entirely literal. This is the NVE-based SSD at work. It is insanely fast. The report visualized this really specific scenario. Imagine you dive from a snowy mountain peak straight into the ocean depths.
Okay.
In the old days, that transition from a snow biome to an ocean biome would require a hard cut. Fade to black. Loading bar.
Please wait while we build the ocean.
Exactly. It completely breaks the flow. You are reminded you are playing a game. With this new SSD, the data streams in so fast that there is zero stutter. Not even a microsecond. You just fall. You go from the peak to the water in one fluid motion.
That seamlessness seems to extend to the combat, too. We saw a little bit of this in Legends Arceus, where you run around during battles. But Winds and Waves seems to be taking the training wheels completely off.
Arceus was definitely the prototype. This is the final product. The report calls it a free cam system, but it's really about player agency. You aren't just a disembodied camera anymore hovering behind your Pokemon.
Right.
You are a target yourself. You can physically sprint around the battlefield in real time. You actually have to dodge stray attacks.
And you can talk. I read that part, and I had to double check I wasn't reading a satire site.
Uh-huh. Yes. This is the feature that sounds like a total gimmick until you see how it is integrated. The new Switch 2 controllers have microphone arrays built right into them. The game allows for verbal commands.
So I am literally shouting Pikachu dodge at my TV. My neighbors are going to absolutely love that.
They might file a noise complaint, yes. But the game recognizes the urgency and the specific command you shout. It adds a layer of physical stress in a really good way. You aren't just pressing A and waiting your turn. You are coaching. You are physically involved in the fight.
I can see that being chaotic, but honestly really fun. But the mechanics that sounded the most strategic to me, the one that really changes the meta, is this environmental resonance system.
This is the real deep dive into system interactions. For 30 years, Pokemon has basically been rock, paper, scissors. Water beats fire. Fire beats grass. Simple math.
Right. It's a chart we all memorized in third grade.
Resonance adds a third dimension. Topography and weather modify move power. The report gives a pretty terrifying example. Imagine you are fighting in tall grass. And it's raining heavily.
Okay, wet tall grass.
In the old games, rain just boosted water moves. Simple. In Winds and Waves, if you use an electric type attack in that specific scenario, wet grass, heavy rain, the electricity conducts. It doesn't just hit the single target. It triggers a massive guided area of effect blast that ripples through the wet grass.
Oh, man, so you could accidentally nuke your own team if you were standing in the wrong spot.
Or you could wipe out an entire enemy squad with one move if you plan it right. It turns the environment itself into a weapon. You have to read the terrain now, not just the type chart.
It rewards being observant. I really like that. It makes the world feel dangerous and unpredictable. But look, while Winds and Waves is rewriting the single-player adventure, Nintendo had a one more thing moment. And this feels like a direct shot across the bow at League of Legends.
Pokemon Champions. Yes. If Winds and Waves is for the explorers, Champions is for the gladiators.
This one is strictly multiplayer, right? No story mode, no exploring towns.
Strictly competitive, releasing right around the corner in April 2026. The source report makes it very clear this is designed specifically for esports arenas. They even mention EVO. This is Nintendo trying to capture the massive market that Riot Games and Valve have dominated for a decade.
Visually, though, it looks totally different. Winds and Waves is this photorealistic high-end PBR showcase. Champions looks like an anime. It's heavily cel-shaded. Why the split personality? Why not make them look the same to show off the console?
That is a purely strategic business decision. Photorealism is incredibly heavy. It requires the Switch 2 to run properly. But they want Champions to have the absolute biggest possible player base on day one. By going with a stylized, cel-shaded look, they can run this game on the Switch 2 at incredibly high frame rates, but they can also run it on the legacy Switch 1.
So there are like 150 million Switch 1 consoles out there, and they aren't leaving them behind.
Exactly. You can't build a massive esport if only the early adopters of the new console can play it. Plus, for esports, you really don't want visual clutter. You want clean lines, high contrast, and rock-solid frame rates to ensure a low internet ping. You can't have lag in a tournament for $1 million just because the game was trying to render a realistic rock texture in the background.
That makes total sense. Prioritize function over form for the competitive scene. Gameplay-wise, the report compares it to auto-battlers like Teamfight Tactics or Dota Underlords.
It's a really interesting hybrid. You have a drafting phase, which is huge in esports, where you pick your team of either 3v3 or 6v6, you ban opponents' picks, and you set up synergies. Then you place them on a grid.
So your physical positioning on the board is key.
Positioning is everything. Tanks in the front, glass cannons in the back. It operates on ticks of time, so it's much faster than the mainline turn-based games. And of course, the business model is live service.
The magic words for Wall Street. Let me guess. Battle passes.
Battle passes. Seasons, cosmetic skins for your Charizard.
Yes.
It is designed from the ground up for recurring revenue. Winds and Waves is a one-time purchase. Champions is a subscription to a lifestyle.
And that segues perfectly to the money side of things. Because while we gamers are drooling over the graphics and the gameplay, the investors are drooling over the business plan, Nintendo stock was up 8.5%.
It is a massive jump for a company of that size. We are talking billions of dollars in market cap added practically overnight.
The projections in the Tekken report are staggering to me. They're estimating 10 to 15 million Switch 2 units sold in the first month. That sounds incredibly optimistic, doesn't it?
It sounds optimistic until you look at the broader landscape. It is the system seller concept on steroids. Sony and Microsoft are gearing up for the PS6 and the next Xbox. Those are going to be high-powered beasts. Nintendo knows they can't compete on raw flops alone. They can't outpower PS6.
They compete with IP.
They compete with culture. You launch the Switch 2, which is a very respectable piece of tech, but you bundle it with the one franchise that spans three generations of fans. It creates fanatical confidence among investors. If you want to play the new era of Pokemon, you absolutely must buy the new hardware. It effectively blocks the competition because for a huge demographic, The Switch 2 becomes the only console that matters in 2026.
It's a safety net made of money.
Ha, huh, effectively, yes.
Before we get to the cultural fallout of this, because surprisingly, not everyone is happy, I want to flag a little detail for our listeners. We usually don't do this, but I found this buried in the footnotes of the Tekken Game report and thought it was actually pretty useful, especially since we were talking about spending hundreds of dollars on new consoles and games.
Oh, the promo code.
Yeah. Apparently, Tekken Army is running a promo with Amazon for the launch. If you are looking to buy these games or stock up on eShop cards, the report cited the code AMZ_gamer26. It's supposed to knock 10 to 20% off eShop cards.
Which, considering next-gen games are probably going to cost 70 or 80 bucks, is definitely not nothing.
Exactly. We're not selling it, just passing along a fun fact from the research. If you can save 20 bucks, you should absolutely take it.
Always take the savings.
But let's pivot back to the reaction, because you mentioned earlier that the Tekken report highlighted a fractured reaction among the fan base.
Right. You would think everyone would just be cheering for better graphics and no loading screens, but there is a real philosophical divide here. The source describes it as the traditionalists versus the modernists.
I have seen this online. The soul of Pokemon debate. It gets really heated.
It gets very heated. Think about the traditionalists. These are people who grew up with Red and Blue on the original Game Boy. We are talking 16-bit sprites, black and white screens.
I was one of them. A little pixelated squiggle on the screen was a terrifying dragon because my brain made it a dragon.
Exactly. The abstraction was the point. It invited you to imagine the rest of the world. The traditionalists are arguing that by moving to this hyper-realistic, AI-driven, PBR graphics style, you are essentially killing that magic. You are spoon-feeding the player.
They think it's becoming just another generic AAA blockbuster, like it's losing its unique identity.
They worry the nostalgic, classical soul of the era is being polluted by the tech, that it's losing its charm just to chase graphical fidelity. The anxiety is, if a Pokemon looks too real, does it stop being a monster you can bond with and start being just a realistic lizard?
But then you have the modernists on the other side.
The modernists are the ones crying tears of joy right now. They have been waiting 25 years to see a world that actually matches the anime they watched as kids. For them, seeing a fully rendered flight of Charizard through volumetric clouds with light refracting off its wings that isn't a betrayal, that is the dream finally being realized.
It's the classic tension between nostalgia and innovation.
And the market has clearly picked a side here. The modernists are winning. The sheer scale of the visual leap is just too compelling for the mass market to ignore.
It really feels like Nintendo looked at the raw power of the upcoming PS6 and said, we can do that, but we can do it with Pikachu.
And that is a terrifying proposition for Sony and Microsoft. Because how do you compete with the cultural phenomenon that now also looks and plays like a next-gen blockbuster? It completely removes the one major advantage the competition always had, which was superior graphics.
It really is a declaration of dominance for the next decade of gaming. We have got the high-fidelity hardware with the Switch 2 and DLSS. We have the massive visual leap in the flagship IP with Winds and Waves. And we have a dedicated esports expansion with Champions. It's a perfect pincer maneuver on the gaming industry.
A very well thought out and very profitable pincer maneuver.
So as we wrap this deep dive up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a thought. We talked a lot about that dream of photorealism today.
It's definitely the central theme of this whole launch.
As we finally get this game where every single scale on a Gyarados is rendered by physics and AI, where the computer does all the work of visualizing the world for us, is there a cost to that innovation?
The cost of imagination.
Exactly. When the screen shows you absolutely everything in perfect 4K detail, is there any room left for your own mind to wander? We begged for this exact tech for 20 years. But now that it's finally here, will we inevitably miss the days when a couple of pixels on a tiny screen could be anything we wanted them to be?
That is the question of the decade. Do we want reality or do we want magic?
Something for you to mull over while you wait for April. Thanks for taking the dive with us today.
Always a pleasure.
We will catch you on the next one.